Okay, today's daf is Samach Beit. We're starting at the bottom of daf Samach Aleph Amud Beit, and I need to reorient you here because we're going to be going over some of the issues that we spoke about yesterday. So what we're doing right now is we are in the middle of a machlokas between Rabba and Rav Chisda that has to do with Arelut. And the question is, if you had a machshava at the time of Shechita, where the Shechita itself was done correctly, but you had in mind that the Zrika should be for servicing Arelim. Now, the question is that it does that Korban Pesach become possible because of the fact that you wanted it to be the schus for these Arelim, that they should have like a Korban Pesach, even though they won't be able to eat it and so on. There's no such thing, obviously, but this is what you did. Or is there no concept of Arelut in the Zrika? That's how we understood the Machlokas yesterday. Now, gentlemen, I just want to tell you that I believe that the way that you need to approach this is one of two ways. Either you're going to have to put in the time to work out the Shakla V'Tarya in detail. And I think this is true of many dapim like this. There aren't so many dapim like this, but every once in a while, you get into dapim that are extremely intricate in terms of the Masav Matan, which we call the Shakla V'Tarya in the Gemara. So those kind of things, because of the fact that they're so intricate and involve so many different machshavas and sometimes introduce a lot of new inyanim, and each one of them needs to be understood in order to be able to flow with the Gemara. Because of that, either you're going to put in the time, which I've been suggesting all along, that the time has to be put in advance and you need to familiarize yourself. Or this might be your fifth time through Shas together and so on, in which case, fine, then you've already put in the time without even realizing it. That's another alternative. But the other alternative is to open up your mind and to just flow without needing to grab on to the full implications of each of the 50 or so stages that develop during the Shakla V'Tarya of the Gemara, each one of which is then supplanted by something else. It's very difficult to do that fully. And therefore, if you allow yourself to flow with the Shakla V'Tarya, then you pick up an immense amount of not only new ideas, but you also pick up an immense amount of the picture of the way that the Gemara utilizes the flow of Svara. And this is almost, and it's interesting, I mentioned this to you once, Rashi Yuma points this out. It was so important that he needed to explain it. That why does the Gemara do this kind of thing? And why does the Gemara take us through so many different steps? That's the whole point. What you are doing is you are listening in to the working of a Meda mind. In the same way, if you would be listening into your mind and you would be following all of the steps and you would have to print out those steps, it would be exactly the same as the difficulty of trying to work out what the algorithm would be for a computer and to give it the actual steps in programming to be able to duplicate just a 1 second conclusion that you made, which you thought you made without going through any steps. You try to work out all of the steps that your mind went through, and it's mind-boggling how much you need to take into consideration about the nature of space and time and hierarchy of events and so on and so forth, all of which would need to be programmed in and which would take you days just to be able to give a simple determination that you thought of in a second. It's important, says Rashi, to do the same thing on the level of the Meda mind of the Gemara. We want you to go through the steps. And it's an incredible insight. And by going through those steps, you actually train your mind in a sort of patterning. There's this concept of physical patterning for brain-damaged children. You actually pattern your brain to be able to move along with the Gemara. And I really deeply suggest, don't get frustrated. Allow yourself to flow with the various steps. Of course, you're not going to be able to fully appreciate why did we change our mind again? And how did we get here from 15 steps before and so on? It's true. It's difficult to keep up, but you don't need to literally keep up to do the patterning. And I think that's mamish the point. And it was an incredible discovery because like patterning Bichlal, the idea that you could actually rebuild brain damage brain connections and force other neurons to take over what would have normally been done by just going through the motions until finally each time it just becomes second nature. That's what this is about. So enjoy the Shaklavatarya. Don't get frustrated if something isn't 100% clear. Or put in the time and go over it for a couple of hours later. Anyway, so here's what it is that we're discussing. We were in the middle of the machlokes between Rabba and Rav Chisda about whether Arelus Pasels in Zrika. So what happened was is that we first took this Braita, and the reason I'm going over it is because the Gemara is going to get back to that Braita and is going to take it apart step by step. So it's important. We might as well get it straight now. So we had this Braita, and the Braita forced us to recognize that we do not have sufficient information to decide what the din would be if there was one oral in a chabura. Would he pass the chabura? Would he not pass the chabura? So the Braita first said, well, okay, why don't we view it the same thing as Tuma? Tuma doesn't make the chabura puzzle, so why would Orla make it puzzle? Then the Braita said, well, wait a minute. I mean, maybe we should look at it as a problem of a machsheves chutz lizmano. So if somebody would be thinking to eat it at the wrong time, the whole carbon would be blown out of the water for nothing, right? So maybe that's the way we should compare this. One oral is enough to blow the whole thing out of the water. Then we went through the stages of, well, what is it more similar to? Is it more similar to Tuma or is it more similar to Zman? And that brought us to recognizing the distinction between something which passes all carbonates or something that's unique only to the carbon Pesach, or maybe there's a different way of looking at it, because Tuma is a Dover Shehuter Mechlolo. We didn't explain what that meant, but we just assumed Huter Mechlolo means that Betzibur, you're allowed to bring a carbon Betuma. That's what we thought. Anyway, it turned out that there was just as much reason to compare it to one as to compare it to the other, and then we came out with this crazy ending that was extremely opaque, which said, Zot Chukata Pesach teaches us this and what? So we didn't know. So we said, okay, so that must be the machlokas of Rabba and Rav Chisda about how to learn the Zot Chukata Pesach, which was really, really reading an awful lot into that Braita, because both approaches would have needed to insert into the Braita a diak in the pasuk of V'chol Orel Lo Yochabo. So V'chol Orel is mashma, that you need to have all Arelut, and only if it's all Arelut and not if it's part Arelut. And then the question was, how do we look at Zot Chukata Pesach? So Zot Chukata Pesach is telling us Zot applies only to Shechita. Oh, so the question is, and what about Zrika? Nah, says Rabba. So Zrika wouldn't apply at all. No, says Rav Chisda. The contrary. The limitation of requiring everybody to be an Orla applies only to Shechita. But when it comes to Zrika, any little bit of Orla would pass, right? That's what we ended up with yesterday. Now, Rav Ashi came along and said, both of you are wrong. It's ridiculous to read all of this into the story. And actually, your initial assumption is wrong. What makes you think that Kol Orel Lo Yochabo means only if they're all Arelim. Kol Arel Lo Yochabo means even the tiniest, itsy-bitsiest part of Arel. So one person out of 100 would be enough to passel the whole thing. And the Zot Chukat comes to tell me, no, don't read it that way. Only the Kol Arel will passel. But it's not even discussing Shechita and Zrika. And as a matter of fact, today, continues Rav Ashi, I don't even believe that the original machlokas between Rabba and Rav Chisda had anything to do with the way that you explained it, okay? It had nothing to do with whether Arelut qua Arelut passels. That's not the point. The point is that an Orel is not considered to be a member of the potential eaters of this carbon. That's the point. In which case, if you're thinking about giving it to an oral, you're basically doing it shelo lishmo. That's the point, because it's not the shelo l'shem ba'alim. Of course, that's how this whole discussion started yesterday. The interrelationship of shelo l'shem ba'alav to shelo l'shem ha'korban. So shelo lishmo, and there's shelo lishmo of the owner. And that's what we're referring to. So now let us start off on the last line of Samach Aleph Amud Beis, which is where we're holding, and see how Rav Ashi develops his theory that actually the machlokas of Rabba and Rav Chista is not about whether mitzvahs arelas, apostles, if there's any machshavas arelas in Zrika, which, by the way, even though yesterday Rabba supposedly said, mino aminala, I'll prove it to you from the Braita, and Rav Ashi is now coming to argue on both Pirushim and the Braita, and he's going to tell me what Rabba is thinking better than what Rabba said Rabba's thinking. You have to know that oftentimes the Gemara puts words into the Shitas, obviously. So in other words, this is what Rabba would say. I can prove it from the Braita. Said Rav Ashi, ridiculous. You can't prove it from the Braita. That's not what Rabba would say, okay? Let me tell you what Rabba would say. And that's the way to understand the Gemara, as often happens in the Gemara. So Amar Rav Ashi, Rabba and Rav Chista are arguing in the following concept, and it's a beautiful concept. The concept is that when the Torah defines this idea of needing to bring a korban for the purpose of the kapara, of the individual who's bringing the korban and not in someone else's name, where do we get that from? We get that from the beginning of Vayikra, where it says, "V'nirtza lo lechaper alav." So it says over there, "Samach yado arosh ha'olah, v'nirtza lo lechaper alav." Aha! Well, I mean, like, what is all of that babbling? That's telling you that you need to do that with this particular conscious purpose of for him, not for somebody else. It will only be nirtza lo if it was brought lechaper alav. So what it sounds like, a lot of extra words, is actually saying a very purposeful meaning idea that we've introduced the concept of shelo l'shem baalim. Now, the point is, however, if we're being medayik from there, alav velo al chaveiro, it's got to be on him and not to anyone else. Now, when you say anyone else, let me ask you something. You would read that pasuk, l'chaper alav. Would you say, suppose you had in mind to be mechaper on the Democratic Party, would that be considered to be shelo l'shem baalim? No, you would say, of course not. I mean, when it says alav, it means in the same set, obviously. I mean, somebody else that would be shayach to this korban. I mean, not I have in mind to be mechaper on a bird or on a concept. I mean, and so it needs to be part of the set. Exactly. So when you say alav alo al chaveiro, how close to the set does it need to be? That's the machlokas. Rav Chista says, look, Rav Ashi understands Rabba like this. If it says alav alo al chaveiro, then it has to be a member of the set of people that you could bring a korban for. If you can't bring a korban for the Democratic Party, you can't bring a korban for, if it's a Pesach, for an Orel. So therefore, we're not talking about Orel as a problem of Orel. We're just using Orel as an example of understanding the Pagam. There's a completely new way of understanding the Machlokas, of understanding the idea of Shelo L'shem Baalim. Is an Orel an alternative owner? That's the Machlokas. So if an Orel is not even a member of the set of people for whom a Pesach can be brought, then it's like bringing a Pesach for the Democratic Party. I mean, it's irrelevant. That's not a Machsheves Shelo L'shem Baalav, you see? So because of that, says Rabba, look, the Chavero has to be Dumya Didei. He has to be at least capable of being a bar kapara of that korban, in which case, if we're talking about a korban Pesach, he's got to be a member of a chabura, at least potentially. So Av Chavero de bar kapara. But in this case, an Orel is simply not included in the set of people who could be a Korban Pesach bringer, correct? Whereas Rav Chista says, you are right, theoretically. However, I disagree with there being a concept of an Orel that is a given non-member of a set. The member of the set is anyone to whom theoretically a Korban Pesach can be brought for. Now listen, take this Orel, give him a quick snip, and now he's a member of the set of people that the Korban Pesach can be brought for, correct? Okay, so, what, you're going to say he's not included in the set because he's missing a one-minute operation? That's ridiculous. That is a function of Hoyle. since it is the easiest thing in the world to make him roy for the Korban Pesach, and if he wanted to, de'iboy ho'il, de'iboy mitaken nafshei, he could simply make himself nimol, then therefore he's considered to be a member of that set. How? Wait a second! That's crazy. Reb Chisda and Rabba were actually the ones who argued about Ho'il way back when we were trying to discuss what the din is of the Erev Tafshilin, remember? Reb Chisda was the one who said, no, you can't say that just because if a guest would arrive, you're allowed to. He said, that's crazy. He was the one who made fun of Ho'il. And he said, the real reason that you're allowed to make an Erev Tafshilin is because Midiraisa, you can prepare from Yontif to Shabbos anyway. So the Chachomi were the ones who asked it. So the Chachomi made this idea. But he took exception to Rabba's din that the reason you're able to cook on Yontif for Shabbos is because, well, even when you're cooking, it might be needed for Yontif. I mean, you never know. Moshe Forman may knock at the door, and there you're going to need all of that food. So because of that, there is no isser of cooking. Okay? So how all of a sudden the Rav Chisda and Rabba now take opposite positions? Rabba is saying, no. We don't say theoretically you could have made yourself a member of that set. That's Ho'il. I don't believe in Ho'il. And Rav Chisda is the one who says, no, theoretically you could have. I do believe in Ho'il. I'd explain that. Says, and ask the Gemara, Umi Yisrael Rav Chisda Ho'il? I thought Rav Chisda doesn't hold of Ho'il. Didn't we say if you bake a cake from Yontif to Chol, Rav Chisda says you get Malkus and Rabba says you don't? Rabba says you don't because Armin and Ho'il v'imikli le'orchim chozile hashtanami chozile. If guests would come, you would need the cake. And therefore, lo lucky. And Rav Chisda says, no, you get Malkus. Lo Armin and Ho'il. Now look, I mean, I can understand that I don't really have a big problem over here when it comes to explaining why this case of Ho'il does not satisfy Rabba. It's very simple. To say that someone may knock on the door does not require any change in the current status of affairs. It's just a question of something happening. But to say that somebody is going to affect an actual change to give himself a brit milah, that's a maisa, okay? A maisa is a change in the current status. So therefore, right now the guy's an oral. The fact that he could theoretically do something to change that, I mean, you don't say that the theoretical possibility of doing something creates the equivalent of it's having been done. That's ridiculous. So therefore, Rabba doesn't have any problem. In this case, I don't see it as oil. But this very distinction makes it horrible for Rav Chisda, because if Rav Chisda is ready to say, even when it comes to doing a maisa, I'd say oil, why is he not ready to potter you from Malkus when it comes to the din of oil on baking on Yontif? I mean, there for sure be. I mean, over there, even Rabba agrees you say oil. Why would Rav Chisda disagree? That's our question. So Bishlema de Rabba de Rabba, that's not a problem. Hachem mechusar ma'aseh. And Hatam, you're not mechusar ma'aseh, but Rav Chisda and Rav Chisda, like, whoa. Answers the Gemara, when Rav Chisda says he doesn't hold of Ho'il, that just means l'kula, he doesn't hold of. I'm not going to allow you to get away with murder and allow you to bake on Yontif for Shabbos because of this ridiculous idea someone may knock on the door. But on the other hand, I am not going to let you get away with murder to have a machsheves arelim and say, well, arelim don't count. That's a chumrah. I'm ready to say hoil for chumras. Absolutely. So if that's the case, then there should be no problem in Rav Chisda. Of course, that bothers Tosef. I don't understand. Are we talking about a Drabonin? Obviously, he must told that it's an Isser Drabonin, and therefore the Drabonin can make a difference between the Chumra and the Kula. I mean, but it doesn't make sense in all of the sugyas where we might be dealing with the D'oraisa. Now, I just want you to know, as an aside, that there are many different approaches to this. This approach, to take it literally, that's Tosfos. The Ramban explains that there's a... the meaning of l'chumra and l'kula is not the normal sense of l'kula v'l'chumra. I'll rely on the same case, but only if it's l'chumra. He says there are two fundamentally different types of ho'il. One is benogea iser v'heter. When it's benogea iser v'heter, for a particular situation would develop or not develop, so that there you have a machlokas. That's what we're calling l'kula. L'kula in the sense of I will rely on something developing, namely a guy coming to the door, or not in this case, as we'll see, not nogea, the milas. We'll see in a moment why. So that's Isavater. That's called Lakula, meaning relying on a situation. The Lachumra is the definition of a set. There, says the Ramban, where you're coming to explain what is the meaning of a particular defined Isser. So we're saying the definition of Shalo Lishmo, would it be Lo Lishem Baalim, would it be applied to this individual or not? That is a totally different sense of Hoel. It means when the Torah sets up as a conceptual set, those who are considered to be Nifsalim because of a Machsheves Shalo Lishem Baalim. Over there, do we allow the Hoel to define the nature of the set? Because this is not something that's an ongoing question. Will this happen? Will that happen? It's a question of what defined the set as it was created. That is called over here Lachumra, because it's not the point of relying, it's the point of including. And it's a totally different idea. And therefore, he makes it Nogea the Dioraisa. There are other approaches as well. There are other approaches to the entire Gemara. The approach that we've learned is Rashi's approach, that initially we thought we were talking about Arelus. Now we're talking about Shinoi Shem Baalim. And the only question is whether Arelim are included in Shinoi Shem Baalim. Now, meanwhile, we've picked up an awful lot of ideas over here about the interrelationships of the different psulim and where they would apply and what are considered to be psula begufais and so on and so forth. But meanwhile, this gets us to the end of the discussion of what the machlokas would be in the question of either Shalom Lishmo or Lishem Arelus. According to Rav Ashi, there never was a machlokas about whether there is Arelus. Everybody agrees there is Arelus. If it's complete Arelus, the only machlokas would be the question of whether an Arel is also considered to be a Shinoi Shem Baalim. Now, we finish that. Now the Gemara wants to go back to the Brisa that we analyzed yesterday. Now that everybody is here, I want to ask you please to have in mind, today is the yahrzeit of my most incredible grandmother from Tzvat, and her name is Hinda Bas Reb Avner, and this is her yahrzeit, and especially you, Gavi, I mean, you're living right there, almost like at near her chutzner, so I could send you a picture of her, and you can walk down the street and have her in mind. Okay, sitting in her chutzner in Tzfas. Okay, so there I am. I'm remembering that presence in my life as a kid. It's like bringing Tzfat always into your life. You would, you know, count going down the stairs with that Tzfat accent, you know, but like very Tzfasi. Anyway, so have her in mind. Okay, so we go back now, a completely new issue. Let's go back to the discussion we had yesterday about the Braita, because I did not understand that Braita, okay? Do you mind if we talk about it again, says the Gemara? So Marzutra, Bereder of Mori, asks Ravina, what was that whole discussion we had yesterday in the Daf Yomi? That it says, Ho'il v'orla poselet and Tuma poselet. So we said, let's learn just like Tuma. It doesn't make a little bit of Tumah the equivalent of the whole thing being possible. So to Orla, Mixas Orla is not the same as Kar Orla. Now, what are we talking about exactly? Because, excuse me, but the Mishnah that started this whole discussion over here, our Mishnah in this Perek, started discussing L'tameim u'l'torim, right? And L'mulim u'l'arelim. Now, darn it, that's the same Mishnah that discusses both issues. Now, why would you know one of the issues and not know the other issue? What are you saying? You're asking, well, we could learn out, after all, Mixas Arelim from Mixas Tmeim. It's the same Mishnah that says Mixas Arelim is okay, that says Mixas Tmeim is okay. So what were you talking about? I don't understand. Unless I missed the point when you were talking about Tuma, but I mean, it seems to me that when you said from Tuma, what did you mean? Were you talking about people that were tummy? And you're saying it's not miktas, it's not kekol tumah. Meaning, let's say you got four or five guys that are tummy and four or five guys that are tahar. So the fact that there's tumayim there, they don't pasul the tahorim, right? Fine. So if that's the point, the Mishnah says exactly the same thing, gabe orlanami. holopasis. The same Mishnah that says lemulim v'la'erim la'arelim is kosher, as says the tmeim v'torim is kosher. So how come tuma you know the Mishnah, but oral you don't know the Mishnah? I understand. You only know half of a Mishnah? What's going on? So obviously, I mean, Mishna orla de mishafkale if tuma is pshitale. Obviously, therefore, we're talking about this discussion outside of the givens in the Mishnah, right? So, in other words, you don't know the Mishnah. Okay, so what tumah is a given without the tumah in the Mishnah? Okay, I mean, you're obviously talking about tumah's basar. You're saying, if the meat of the korban becomes tumah, so it only passels whatever was tumah. It doesn't passel the whole korban, doesn't it? Does it? So, my lo asaba mixes tumah kakol tumah, because if, let's say, one aver of the korban becomes tumah after the chechta, now a piece of meat becomes tumah, right? So what do we do with it? So burn it. But the rest of it, we're obviously achlin and lay. Okay, and therefore you want to compare the same thing with the arelin. But then the rest of the price, it doesn't make sense, okay? Because now how did we work it out? B'mayu kimta, bitum es baser. Okay, I dare you to read the next piece. Ema seifa. We want to compare something that is not noeg b'kol hazvachim to something that is not noeg b'kol hazvachim. Huh? Zman, which is noeg b'kol hazvachim. What do you mean? Tumas basar is not noeg b'kol hazvachim? Go ahead and show me one korban that tumas basar is not noegable, please. That's crazy. So didn't you just say, b'mayu kimta tumas basar? So then, am I in a noeg b'kol hazvachim? So now all of a sudden, we're not talking about tumas basar. Now all of a sudden, we're talking about the tumah of the person, right? And it's not noeg b'kol hazvachim, because the ilu b'kol hazvachim, an oral and a tamei can ask somebody to bring a korban for them. Mashen can b'korban pesach, and oral v'tamei can't. So now this makes sense to you, this b'raisa. We start talking about the tumas basar, and then we move on to the tumas persons, and this is supposed to like be a smooth reading b'raita. Said Ravina Tem, why not? It doesn't have to be consistent in the case. We're talking about the question of whether it makes more sense to compare arelut to the concept of tumah, okay? Shame tumah. We're not talking about a case. So the concept of tumah is something that would be actually affecting, obviously, only what is tummy and not what isn't tummy. That's in terms of tumah's basar. And it would also be something that is, in fact, if it's gavre, would not be noeg b'kol hazvachim, because part of it is not noeg b'kol hazvachim. That's all we're saying. What's so bad about that? Okay, that's one approach. Now, I could tell you another approach. I could say that the meaning of eino noeg b'kol hazvachim, in fact, actually is talking about tumas basar. And what do I mean? Aha, I'll tell you what I mean. Suppose all of the meat of another korban is burnt up, okay? And now it's all missing, or it's all tummy. Can I go ahead and still bring this korban and be zorik the dam? Why, certainly, as long as you have a murim to bring. I mean, look, it's a chaval. The kohanim aren't going to get any meat out of this korban. We're certainly not going to throw out the korban and not be zorik the dam if we have all of the murim for the achilat mizbeach, right? So we'll do it. But on a korban pesach, we will not do it. That's the difference. Because a korban pesach, if you don't have anything to eat, even though you have all the emurim to bring on the mizbeach, we will not be zorek the dam of the korban pesach, because the whole point of a korban pesach is for it to be eaten. That's the difference. And that would be talking about even the question of the tumas basar. So when we say in anoig b'kol hazvachim, that's because all other zvachim, it doesn't matter whether all of the emurim became tame but not the meat, or whether all of the meat became tame but not the emurim, we will go right ahead and be zorek es adam. Masha inke, when it comes to the korban pesach, if the emurim are tame but we have our meat, we will be zorek the dam. But if the meat is tummy, even if we have all the emurim, we will not be zorek the dam, because the only point of the Pesach is to have meat to eat. Okay, fine. So now you want to say the whole thing is talking about tumas basar? Ha! So I dare you to explain the rest. This, of course, is only according to the Ibai Seima, right? Okay, keep reading, my friend. B'mayu kimta b'tumas basar? So now look at the next piece. Danin davar shelo hutar michlalo mi davar shelo hutar michlalo. You can't use tumah as a proof to arelas. You can't use tumah because tumah is hutar michlalo. What? What kind of tumah is zutar miklolo? Tumas basar is zutar miklolo? What, are you crazy? Tumas basar is never zutar miklolo. You have a carbon tzibur when the whole tzibur is tummy. What's the din? You're allowed to bring the carbon to tumah. And do the kohanim eat the basar? Chas v'sholem. It's tummy. Where did the Torah ever say you should eat something that's tummy? No, of course not. So where in the world do we say that it's hutra? Tumas basar is an hutra. Only tumas gavri is hutra. El pshita b'tumas gavri. Echa hutra mechlola b'tzibur. So I got the same problem. You didn't help me very much by giving me the e-boy same that we could be talking about tumas basar all the way through, consistently through this braisa, because when you get to the end, you're going to have to admit that all of a sudden we've changed back to tumas gavri, right? Okay, I'd explain that. I'm going to do the same trick I did before. I could tell you that actually, shame tuma kaporech. Yeah, okay, fine. So now we'll have to bite the bullet and admit that we're talking about the concept of tuma as opposed to a particular case of tuma. Or I could pull the same shtick. I could tell you we're actually talking about tuma's basar even here. And it does work out, okay? Because there is a place where tuma is hutra for eating. You're kidding. Yeah, guess where? The Korban Pesach. If the Torah tells you that if the rove of the tzibur is tummy, that you bring the Korban Pesach, what do you think it's telling you? That you bring a Korban Pesach and you throw the meat in the garbage pail? Obviously, if the Torah is being matir a Korban Pesach betuma, then it has to be telling you to eat it betuma, because that was the only point to bring the Korban Pesach. And therefore, there's actually a hutra miklolo in the case of the Korban Pesach. And therefore, vibay sema kula betumat basar, and echa hutra betumas pesach. The tzlan pesach abba betuma, ne'echal betuma, shloba mitchilato, Elala achila, put down that hand. We don't have time for hands unless you want Dr. Barry to look at it more closely. You could send it to him personally in an email. Now, let us continue. Mosi Ravuna Breder of Yoshua. Now we've got a question about hoil. Is it really true that we're ready to apply hoil to this case? Okay, I've got an interesting question from you. Now, this interesting question is more than an interesting question for us. It opens up our mind to an entirely new sugya, which is a brilliant question of whether if I shecht a Korban Pesach for something else, that enables me to passel the Korban Pesach. How about if I shecht something else for a Korban Pesach? Would that actually be making it passel because it takes on the personality of a messed up Korban Pesach? Now, that is a whole new issue, which we're going to get into much more later. But right now, we're bringing it in agav. So here is my question. Pesach, in one of the cases of a Pesach that automatically turns into a Korban Shlomim, is a Pesach she'avra shenato. Now, this would be a case where the Pesach is already too old to be brought as a Korban Pesach. So, in other words, you had made it into a Korban Pesach, and it had been born prior to last year's Pesach. You want to use it for this year's Pesach. That means by the time this year's Pesach comes around, then it's already going to be past its first year. And as we learned in the Parsha that you're preparing for Shabbos and learned Rashi, that it has to be, Keves is called a Keves betoch shnat leidato. It's only within the year of its birth. And therefore, in this case, if you had in mind, take that Korban Pesach, you shechted it on Erev Pesach, and you shechted it as a Pesach. Now, obviously, that's bad news because it's too old to be a Pesach and it's pasul. But the same thing would be a shochat acherim l'shem Pesach. What would be the din over there? So ha-shochet acherim l'shem Pesach bizmano. Now, this carbon has turned into a carbon shlamim, right? If you shech this carbon as a Pesach, it is possible as a shlomim. So that's the question over here, because you're shochet a shlomim l'shem Pesach, if you're shochet bizmano l'shmo, because it automatically turned into a shlomim once it passed its birthday. As Tosis points out, you don't need Akira for this particular case of changing a Pesach into a shlomim. What, however, would be the din if you shechted other things for a Pesach during the time of the kashrus of a Pesach? So Rabbi Eliezer says, it's pasul, and Rabbi Yeshua says it's makshir. But note that the only discussion is bezmano. What if it would be not during the zman of the Pesach? Then it would be kosher. But if you hold of hoyel, it shouldn't matter. Because if you hold of hoyel, then we should say that just as it's pasul, in the event that it would be bezmano, then the same thing should be true, that it would be pasul even shelo bezmano. Because we should say, hoyel bizmano pasul shelo bizmano nami pasul. If it's strong enough to pasul something, just at the right time, fine. So then you could have done this at that time and pasul it, so it should retain its ability to be the set of those things that pasul. And you said, Reb Chisda holds l'chumra of hoyel. So how come over here we don't see anybody taking that into consideration? Nobody says that it would be pasul. Omer of Papa, yes, you're right. But you're also wrong because you don't know enough. There is a reason, a specific reason why that is not applicable. Because the Torah says the idea, where do you think it comes from? We just like pick it out of a hat? That if you shech something for a Pesach, that's going to make it pasul just because if you shech it a Pesach for it, it's pasul? If we learn it out from a pasuk, it says, V'amartem zevach Pesach hu. Remember that every time we use any existential word, who, haya, and so on, the Gemara darshans, existential words mean there are no incidental changes in existential reality. Either it is who, bahavayato, it remains existentially it and only it, and not hu l'shum achirim, and not achirim l'shmo. And therefore, there's a comparison over here, which would not be true if it weren't based on this existential comparison, that since it is an existential comparison, what the Torah is saying is, look, existential means you can't pretend. It can't be something that it isn't. You can't change things that are the way they are. And therefore, if it's telling you that the concept of a Pesach is an existential concept, then that would mean pretending something else is a Pesach is devastating. And pretending a Pesach is something else is devastating because it's an attack on reality. That's the point. And that's what makes it pasul, which is an entirely new way of understanding the psul. And if it's that case, then it also follows that in the same way that it is only defined as a who in this sense, in if it meets these requirements. So bizmano, we're over there, we say that's what we're talking about, zevach pesach hu bizmano, where it's possible if you try to change it to be something else, then and only then are things possible for it. But shalo bizmano, when there's the idea of the existential pesach does not apply any longer, and it is kosher l'shum acherim dafke, it is not a pesach to say hu. So then acherim are ksherim l'shmo. You can't say hoi about that. That's insane. Hoyel is the last thing you could apply to an existential psul. And therefore, the whole thing doesn't apply. Brilliant. I mean, it's so beautiful. Okay. Now we have this amazing story. This story just gives us an insight into how much information is contained in the drushes of psukim that it's absolutely it's mind-boggling. Besides being a funny story, it's a mind-boggling story, okay? There is one perek in Divrei Hayomim that it starts with a list of who are the B'nai Otzal, okay? So it starts off with this. Remember that Divrei Hayomim is nutty. Not one word makes any sense. Not one person that's referred to existed, as far as we know. And they're always calling people by names that nobody ever heard of before. And we need to figure out, as the Gemara says elsewhere, you're trying to fool us, but we're too smart. We need to figure out in each one of these cases, what is the point? But one of the craziest two psukim in Divrei Hayomim are the psukim about the children of Otzal. Now, in one perek, okay, it starts off with this idea of La'otzal Shishabanim. Here are the exciting names of the children of Otzal, whoever Otzal is. Azrikam Bechoro, Yishmael, Sha'arya, Ovadya, Hanan, Kol Ela B'nei Otzal. Great. Now we read through an entire perek, okay? We finish up this perek and move on to the next perek. We read through the entire perek, almost 50 psukim, and we get to the following pasuk. You're not going to believe this. Ula atzel shisha banim ve'ele shmotam azrikam b'choro Yishmael v'sha'aria v'avadia v'chanan ele b'nei atzel. We just had 50 psukim describing all of the development of B'nai Atzel, and they started off with Ko Ela B'nai Atzel, and 50 psukim later, the exact same pasuk, except it's no longer Ko Ela, it's Ela B'nai Atzel. Okay. Now, this obviously represents something of a mega challenge to understanding Divrei HaYomim. So, keeping that in mind, let's take a look at the story that's coming up. And this story has to do with the incredible brisas. There was a whole set of brisas, long brisas, that were all the explanations of Divrei HaYomim, and they were considered to be extremely complex and also containing much Sisrei Torah. And therefore, if you weren't holding by that madrega, the Rebbe would not teach it to you, and ultimately it was hidden. So, Reb Simon Lohi came along to Reb Yochanan, and he tells Reb Yochanan, please teach me Sefer Yuchasim. Now, Sefer Yuchasim is the book of Brises and Midrashim on Divrei HaYomim, and the reason it's called Sefer Yuchasim is because the main aspect of Divrei HaYomim is that it is able to trace in every single generation the continuing development of the nature of Adam through the Avais, through the Shvatim, and exactly which genetic changes were central to develop the Malchus Yisrael. That's basically why it's called Sifrei Yuchasim. And remember, it was so important that it was the difference between HaKadosh Baruch Hu being willing to give the Torah to B'nai Yisrael and his unwillingness to bring it to the Goyim. Show me your Sifrei Yuchasim, is what he said to them. This is the depths of Sifrei Yuchasim. Because of that, it contains so much information that is outside of the normal way we understand Torah. And some of the Mefarshim actually speak this out, that only if you knew Kol HaTorah Kula and you don't have enough information to deal with life because that's not detailed enough and you need the insight in Yuchasim, that's what allows you to know the details and the subtleties. So Reb Simon Lohi essentially was claiming that he is on a level. He's telling Reb Yochanan, I want you to teach me Sefer Yuchasim. Now, Reb Yochanan did not really know Reb Simon Lohi, did not want to teach him Sefer Yuchasim for sure. So he says to him, so where do you come from? He says, oh, me, I come from Lud. Ah, Lud. And where do you currently live? I live in Narda. Oh, says Reb Yochanan, what a shame. We have a Kabbalah that you're not allowed to teach Sefer Yuchasim for anyone who born in Lud or anyone who lives in Narda. What a shame that you happen to be just the guy, both from Lud and Narda. Oh my God, no way, I can't teach it to you. So, ain't shown in Lola Ludim, Velo Nardoim, and for sure not you, because you're from Lud and you live in Narda. Get out of here. Koshikenat, Ba'at mi Lud, B'metovcha b'Narda. Anyway, Reb Simon Lohi was not ready to buy into that. Very funny, says he. And now he takes on the attitudes of some other people that I know. And he says, I ain't leaving until you're teaching. And he just keeps driving him crazy until finally Reb Yochanan says, okay, damn it, I give up. Fine, we'll learn. Okay, says Reb Simon Lohi. But listen, we got to finish it in 3 months because I only have 3 months. At that point, Reb Yochanan grabs this clod of rock and throws it at him and says, you are nut. Okay. But the discussion is mamish is so beautiful because it also brings us this incredible ideas about Bruria. Remember, we met up Bruria before. What a toughie, right? The wife of Rabbi Meir. But okay, we knew that she was like a big Talmidah Chachamim. But how much, we didn't know, okay? So anyways, he picks up this rock and he throws it at him. And he says to him, you are really a jerk. Uma Bruria, the visa de Rabbi Meir, Barte de Rabbi Hananya ben Tradya. Look, Bruria is a daughter of the wife of Rabbi Meir. She's the daughter of Rabbi Hananya ben Tradya. you can imagine that she had a little bit better insight into Yuchasin than you, Mr. Smaloy. And she was capable of learning 300 different sugyas in one day from 300 different Balei Ma'amorim, okay? And was able to keep it straight, not like you jerks here in the Daf Yomi where you can't keep another 10, 20 things straight. She kept 300 things straight every single day, all right? And she then tackled this Sefer Yuchasin. And she spent 3 years on it. And at the end of 3 years, she said, I don't get it. So you, Mr. Genius, you want to learn it in 3 months. It just proves what I said before. You're an idiot. So out. So Rabbi Yochanan is picking up his computer and walking out. And as he's walking out, Rabbi Smoloy says, Rabbi, just one question. Can you explain to me the difference between the question of lishmo v'shalo lishmo and la'ochlav v'shalo la'ochlav? So why is it that la'ochlav v'shalo la'ochlav is considered to be kosher anyway, but lishmo v'shalo lishmo is not? Oh, you've got brains, says Rabbi Yochanan. I never knew that before. So I didn't understand that we're talking with somebody who does have a brain. I thought you were a stomach jerk. So, okay. Obviously, you do have some brains. Come sit down. Let me explain life to you, my boy. Because once you understand this, then you'll already understand. It's amazing because all of the Mefarshim, of course, go through what in the world did this have to do with the element of brain that was necessary for understanding, say, for Yochasin. Okay, it's all kinds of amazing analysis of what this Lishmo, which, of course, is the only reason that we brought this story here in Korban Pesach, which has everything to do with the idea of L'mishpachosam, which is the marker for the idea of Yuchasim, and everything needed to be Lefi, the Mispar of Mishpacha. So the whole thing is a Pesach Sugya, and we never even understood why. And now he's comparing it to the Sugya that we've been dealing with in terms of L'shma or Shalom L'shem Ochle. So he says, okay, sit down, and I'll explain it to you, okay? First of all, Lishmo v'shalo lishmo is dealing with the nature of the Korban itself. So it's a psul begufo. Masha'inkein lo'ochlav v'shalo lo'ochlav has to do with something outside of the guf of the Korban. Furthermore, that's A. B. Lishmo v'shalo lishmo, e efshar levarer isuro. That is something that defines the entire Korban. You can't say this is the part that's lishmo, and this is the part that's shalo lishmo, can you? But lo'ochlav v'shalo lo'ochlav, you can. Because every single Korban, anyway, you're going to be splitting it up between the number of people that are going to be eating it, and you're going to be taking, this kezias belongs to you, this kezias belongs to you, thank you very much. So I'm going to do exactly the same thing on this Korban, where some of it was brought shalola ochlav. Forget about that. I'm not handing that out. This part belongs to you, this part belongs to him, and so on. So it's still possible to split it up, and therefore, efshalavar isuro. C. Lishmo v'shalo lishmo is a psul that affects all arba avodot. Because shalo lishmo, remember, you can do even in the halacha as long as it's about what you're doing the zrika for. Ma she'enken la'ochlav v'shalo la'ochlav is only b'shat shchita, tochosu alaseh. And therefore, it's eno b'arba avodot. Okay, D. Lishmo v'shalo lishmo. That is something that can affect the tzibor just as it affects the yochid. You bring a carbon tzibor, which is an eila l'shem chatas, you're going to destroy it with the shalo lishmo. But la'ochlav v'shalo la'ochlav obviously cannot apply to a tzibor as to a yochid. As a matter of fact, it can't apply to any carbon because there are no ochlin. Ravashi Omar. Ravashi says, now, that's very impressive. A, B, C, D. It sounds like you're going through this whole list of very important differences. It's a little bit of disingenuous reasoning over there, says Ravashi, because, let's be honest. The psulo begufo and the question of efshalavari suro boil down to the same thing, because yesterday we said that we cannot consider a psul machshava to be a psul begufo, right? So basically, the only thing that you're saying when you're saying it's a psul begufo is essentially that it has affected the actual body of the Korban. You're saying in terms of the effect. Okay, then that's the same thing. I cannot say this part is lishmo and this part is shalo lishmo. Right. because it affects the entirety of the karma. And that's what the issue is. When it comes to la'ochlav or shalol ochlav, it doesn't affect the karma, and therefore I can still find a piece of meat for you. So it boils down to the same thing. So stop giving us the A, B, C, D. I mean, you know, talk it out. So it's all one thing. You should know that from that day that they stopped being able to teach the Sefer Yuchasim and nobody had access to it any longer. Oh, gosh. Tashash kochan shochachomim kohor ma'ore nehem. People no longer have any kayach to really understand anything. Their eyes have become dimmed. Everything that we knew was because of that book. Omar Mazrucha, you know what they say? Between the first pasuk of Otzel and the second pasuk of Otzel, there were 400 camelfuls of hard disks that were holding all of the drushes on that, okay? And now, imagine how much information we're missing. We can't get hold of any of that. Okay, to be continued.